Expectations of global interest rates cuts later in the year are now paving the way for billions of inflows into global equity funds, although other headwinds of slower growth and geopolitical tensions persist. So with renewed vigor for investment in equity markets, what do investment trends look like in the coming months? And for South Africa, which has seen massive capital outflows, I'm wondering, is the tide about to change? I'm Jeremy Maggs. This is No Ordinary Wednesday. It's our in-depth look at what's driving markets, shaping the economy and changing the game. In this episode, I'm joined by two award-winning Investec Investment Management Fund managers, Barry Shamley, Investec BCI Dynamic Equity Fund Manager, along with co-fund manager Peter Vogel. Now, the fund has won the Best South African General Equity Fund for straight performance over 3 years and for risk-adjusted performance over 5 years at the Raging Bull Awards. The awards recognize excellence and outstanding performance among South African fund managers. Together, we're going to discuss international and local equity markets, what's driving them, the impact of the current macroeconomic conditions, and the outlook for funds in South Africa. Barry Shamley, Peter Vogel, a warm welcome to No Ordinary Wednesday. Barry, let's begin this conversation with an overview of the environment that you are operating in. Looking at just the past 2 years, it's been turbulent economic times globally, characterized by tough monetary policy, stubborn inflation, low growth, and geopolitics. The list goes on and on, not ideal market conditions. So how then is this impacting equity funds worldwide?
Jeremy, it's been a tough time. It depends really which region you've been investing in. The US market has done particularly well over the last 2 years. A lot of emerging markets have struggled. India's been a bit of an exception. But the one main thing we have noticed is that market leadership has narrowed over the last 2 years. And companies with a growth theme like AR have done exceptionally well. Many of the tech mega caps have had exposure to this theme. And a lot of the performance over the last year in particular has come from those Magnificent Seven stocks who have in one way or another had some exposure to the AR theme. There have been another couple of interesting sector surprises. A lot of companies in the luxury goods sector have done surprisingly well despite the very tough economic environment. And more recently, gold, but a very difficult market to navigate. And unless there were very strong growth tailwinds themes, it hasn't been sort of a rising tide that's lifted all markets or all sectors. That's been, like I said, very narrow.
And Barry, I mean, fair to say that South Africa is not immune to these global headwinds that you reference. Add to that our own unique challenges, slow pace of implementing structural reform, load shedding goes on and on, logistical difficulties. So if we bring it home then, how are equity funds faring in spite of those setbacks?
We'll talk predominantly about last year. So last year, there was a mixed result. I think overall, the CAPSRIX was around somewhere around 8% up. But if you're a general equity fund that had invested roughly a third of your money into MSCI World, you would have almost doubled that return. So just to that point I was making earlier on, a lot of the performance came from offshore, came from that global tech space. South Africa, as you said, we've faced a tough environment. Local companies have been navigating a tough environment for a long time now, but more so where we probably at the peak of our interest rate cycle. We've had a very tough experience with regards to infrastructure. Load shedding was probably at its worst we've seen in recent history last year. We've had issues on the rail side. But on a brighter note, we're passing through that period now and a very low base is in place. So that coupled with what we see as almost record low valuation creates an environment that excites us quite a lot.
So, Peter, if we're passing through that space, as Barry is suggesting, what's the mindset of local investors? Are they more optimistic about the South African market, in spite of foreign investors still, I imagine, being unsettled by our macroeconomic conditions?
Thanks, Jeremy. Yes, so some fund managers are a bit more optimistic, but I'd say the average investor has the recent past in their mind and is not particularly excited given the recent negative sentiment towards the SA economy at the moment, underperforming SOEs, very high interest rates, and I guess the uncertainty around upcoming elections play a part. But overall, one definitely can't blame anyone for being cautious. But unfortunately, we don't have the best track record in terms of service delivery. And despite us seeing an incremental improvement from SOEs, there's a lot of distrust about the sustainability of it all. So for us, the negativity has resulted in some very interesting opportunities in the local market.
And Peter, what about rand volatility? The currency has taken a few knocks in the past few months. I mean, obviously, that is playing out in equity markets. In what way?
So we always tend to beat ourselves up about the rand, but at the end of the day, you know, the rand often moves in the short term for South African specific reasons, but in the long term, we generally move in line with the average emerging market. If rates roll over from here and we see some stronger commodity prices, you should see some support for emerging market currencies as a whole, as well as the rand. I think the weaker rand has certainly supported some of our rand hedge shares, but unfortunately, weak commodity prices has meant that we didn't get the same sort of boost for our resources sector. I think within materials, the lackluster performance was largely driven by very weak PGM prices, and consequently, PGM stock prices were severely impacted last year. Large-scale destocking of palladium and rhodium and the growing concern, as you know, about the impact of battery electric vehicles on autocat demand, and with the lack of supply adjustments from producers, this has weighed on prices. So the price to hide last year within materials, for instance, was certainly stocks that had iron ore exposure, as well as some of the gold shares, for obvious reasons. And gold's been a great hedge for portfolios in an environment of stubbornly high inflation, as well as growing geopolitical risks.
So Barry, let's build on that if we can. As you alluded to a little earlier, not all doom and gloom, and South African business has shown resilience in tough times. What should we be hopeful about in the next couple of months then?
I think the first thing we need to do is just get through the elections. It's always a very noisy and unsettling period. Markets hate uncertainty. But beyond that, I think it's probably consensus that rates have now peaked and that the next move will be lower. We're just waiting for the US, supposed to make that first move. And our work has shown that from the point that rates start getting cut, SA Inc. does perform extremely well. I think if you had to look at long-term cycles, I think the other thing that's exciting us a little bit is that China is probably bottoming here. So they've been through a very tough environment because of their maybe overdevelopment in the property sector. That's starting to unwind now. And I think from a policy perspective, they also are becoming more conscious of the impact erratic policies can have on foreign investor sentiment. So I think those two things bode well in terms of commodity demand, certainly, which will certainly benefit South Africa. A weaker US dollar, I wouldn't say we expect an imminent reversal of dollar strength, but I think over the medium to longer term, if you look at longer term cycles, it seems likely that emerging market currencies will start doing well. The US has done extremely well because they've grown persistently, but all things come to an end. But the other thing that is quite interesting is this new two-pot retirement system, which potentially will provide a tailwind for domestic consumption. So that is something else which has got us interested in the domestic retailers in South Africa in the short to medium term.
So, Peter, let's talk a little further about emerging markets and how they have performed in comparison to developed markets and some of the key differences, perhaps, that you're noticing.
So they've all really struggled, barring maybe India. India seemed to have benefited from a government that enables business, but have also benefited significantly from flows exiting China. The standout performer last year was undoubtedly developed market equities, and in particular, the tech-heavy indices. All measured in rands over the last rolling year, you have the MSCI World Index up around 30%, emerging markets are up about 15%, and South Africa up a meager 5%. And so as Barry's mentioned, the widely spoken about Magnificent Seven shares were quite a large contributor to the overall performance, which together make up around 20% of the market cap of the MSCI World Index. These shares were up a staggering 125% on average last year. So that certainly was a big driver of performance. Some of the key contributors to the underperformance of EM versus developed markets were weak performances from China and Russia specifically, as well as a stronger dollar.
So Barry, what are emerging market funds investing in then?
As Pete mentioned, predominantly India at the moment. The main thing they're not investing in, Russia is completely uninvestable for most people at the moment. And China has also seen significant outflows over the past year and a half. I do think that they are going to start changing policy or start being more considerate about any policy changes. An example would be recently there was something that came out from the gaming regulator in terms of tightening the amount of time people could spend on gaming. And when they observed the reaction of the markets to that change, they quite quickly retracted it and removed the head that was in charge of making that decision. So while it has been all about India in the past year or two, I do think that China does potentially, coming off a low base, yeah, does stand to benefit somewhat. But we haven't necessarily seen that inflection point yet, but it is starting to look a bit better.
And Peter, as far as South Africa is concerned, how then are we performing against our emerging market peers?
Yeah, so as mentioned, Jeremy, last year, the South African market return was less than half that of the emerging market index. I think as a country, our growth has been exceptionally disappointing, but much of it can be resolved through better SOE performance, and we've started to see a slight improvement on that front. But improved investor confidence would also help. However, there certainly seems to be a lot of distrust at the moment.
We're going to continue this conversation in just a moment as we take a closer look at SA Inc. stocks. Those are companies whose earnings are predominantly linked to the South African economy. I just want to remind you before we do that, that a new episode of No Ordinary Wednesday drops every fortnight. Please don't miss it. Subscribe to Investec Focus Radio SA wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like the channel, please take a moment to rate us. So as we continue this conversation now, Peter, let's stay with you. Let's discuss SA Inc. as I mentioned. Are these companies still attractive to investors?
Absolutely. We've got some great companies run by some terrific businessmen who are accustomed to navigating a very difficult environment in South Africa. They see the opportunity where others see problems. I think a great example of this is a company like Stadio. It's a real growth story that offers, you know, much needed high quality tertiary education at a reasonable price. And we see a lot of value actually across our investment holding companies as well, where discounts certainly seem to have opened up recently.
Barry, at the beginning of our conversation, you spoke about the excitement regarding tech and AI resulting in significant inflows into global equity markets. What about back home? Is the picture similar, do you think?
Unfortunately not. We don't. We have a very limited offering in terms of technology shares on the JSE. The only ones that really come to mind are Naspers / Prosus, and maybe one or two of the very smaller companies that probably are uninvestable for the heavyweight funds. So the only way investors can get access to that theme right now is through global stocks. But I think in time, what you'll start seeing with the local stocks is they'll start benefiting from some of this new technology in terms of productivity gains and cost cutting. But I would say that's in the very near future, maybe in the sort of medium to longer term.
All right. So considering that then, tech and AI aside, what other sectors then have the attention of the investment community?
One Pete mentioned earlier, which has been a standout year to date and last year, has been gold. We're definitely seeing very strong demand, but not from your traditional sources. We've actually noted ETF outflows, and it appears that it's sovereign investment that's been driving the price. We're also starting to see some interest in the resource space again, as I said, with China bottoming. And for us, a very big theme is energy transition and the commodity intensity of energy transition. And I think another point which has been raised is many people forget the energy intensity of AI. And with companies and countries having made net zero commitments, all of that new energy demand from AI, from data centers, is going to have to come from renewables, which is going to lead for demand for green metals such as copper. So we still, on a medium to longer term, are very excited about the commodity space. And then more recently in South Africa, retail. So with the rates having hopefully topped out, we've determined that consumer discretionary is one of the best places to invest in the medium term once the rates hike has peaked. And then you've got that potential double whammy from the two-pot retirement system. So essentially what that allows is for people to start drawing down when they need to on their retirement savings. It's not an ideal situation, but it's highly probable that that is going to happen, which will boost consumption in South Africa. And then lastly, in the hospitality sector, I mean, we've definitely experiencing some great demand from our local hotels and restaurants. And I think we're going to see some more evidence of that in upcoming results from some of the hotel companies like Southern Sun.
So, Peter, I'm wondering if you can build on that. The BCI Dynamic Equity Fund, obviously on the lookout for attractive companies with high potential for investor return. What sectors do you see growing in South Africa?
So sadly, we don't see many unique growth opportunities in South Africa. We see existing businesses gaining market share as last men standing in some cases, for example, ShopRite. But generally, we are looking at the same toolbox and picking the right sectors and stocks dependent on where we are in the cycle. I think one of the sectors that we like at the moment are the discretionary retailers, and in particular, some of the clothing retailers. So these companies, we've done a bit of analysis going back, tend to perform quite strongly as interest rates start to come down. We believe we are very close to the top of the interest rate cycle. As you'll be well aware, we're also coming out of the perfect storm for these retailers. Rampant inflation coming out of COVID, extraordinarily high interest rates, and the negative impact from load shedding. I think as well as the rise of a large competitor in Shein, this sort of environment is the environment that as a contrarian, you start to get a little bit excited about a pure play SA retailer such as Mr. Price, for example.
So Barry, two quick ones before we come to the end of our conversation. First of all, impact investing. How prominent is the theme in investment trends and what's the appetite like?
It's not that prominent locally, particularly not with the retail space, but it's certainly growing overseas. I think it's important to sort of expand on what impact is. It's about intentionality and additionality. So did you intend to have an impact and did your investment make an actual impact? And it's hard to actually argue that you can have an impact or have any additionality in the listed equity space because effectively you're just buying shares from somebody else. You're not providing the company with new capital to do something that will have a measurable change in an outcome. I mean, there are some people that argue that engagement in the listed space can be impactful, which I do agree with, but it's very hard to run a fund purely on that discipline. So really, your sort of choice is limited then to probably venture capital and debt, green or social bonds. And we do see some demand in the institutional and charity space. But that would be part of the alternatives bucket. So not a huge demand right now. But I think for us, what is quite important is understanding the company impact as opposed to the investor impact. And just ensuring that if we're looking at two companies in the same industry that have a similar valuation and a similar growth trajectory, that we pick the one that has the better net positive impact on planet or society. So that can be done assessing their water usage, their emissions, supply chain, labor policy. So I just can't see how it would not be the best idea to find the one that has the net positive impact, because in time, I think all of these negative impacts will be quantified and that will be a cost that will ultimately be borne. Right now, it's being borne by society and the planet. In time, they will find a way to cost that to the company. So I think it's quite important that we're aware of these company impacts and prefer the companies that are doing the right thing.
And Barry, always difficult, but in the next 12 to 18 months, what are your market expectations? What's the investment outlook and what might be driving that?
I think we're probably at the back end of the current cycle at the moment. So I think the next 6 to 12 months will probably be characterized by an increase in volatility. But this will present an opportunity. We expect greater divergence between equities. Like I said, we've got this very concentrated benchmark now in the MSCI world. And I think it's going to become a little bit easier for active managers to outperform because a lot of those big constituents of the passive ETFs or indices have become quite overvalued. So while we expect weak aggregate returns, we expect stock selection to be quite important. Like I said, we're quite excited about energy transition. That's a long-term theme that we don't think is going anywhere. And confident that asset managers with a rigorous bottom-up process that are a bit more critical than usual will do quite well in this environment. And that is something we pride ourselves on and hopefully will continue doing for our clients.
All right, I think we can park the conversation there. That's the voice of Barry Shamley, along with Peter Vogel. To both of you, thank you so much for joining me on this edition of No Ordinary Wednesday. Just a reminder to our listeners, join us again in a fortnight as we continue to explore money trends shaping your world. If you haven't yet added us to your podcast feed, please search for Investec Focus Radio SA wherever you get your podcasts and hit the subscribe button. To get even more insights from Investec, sign up to the fortnightly Focus newsletter at investec.com/newsletter. Until next time, goodbye from me, Jeremy Maggs, and the entire Focus Radio team.
The views expressed are those of the contributors at the time of publication and do not necessarily represent the views of the firm and should not be taken as advice or recommendations. Investec Limited and subsidiaries, authorized financial service providers, registered credit providers, and long-term insurer.